Hello, everybody, and welcome to another exciting episode of the Michael and Patty Show, coming to you from the Charlottetown waterfront, where it's a beautiful, white, balmy day, minus 16 Celsius, minus 22 wind chill. Welcome. Thanks for listening. Good morning, Patty. Are you de-thawed?
Yes. Good morning. And yeah, it is pretty chilly out, but that's one of the things you have to love about Canada's weather. Lots of opportunities for skiing and snowshoeing and cross-country skiing. I seen somebody doing that at the Belvedere Golf Course yesterday. So lots of winter fun activities to do.
Absolutely. If you're new to our podcast, we cover everything Prince Edward Island real estate, everything PEI and real estate in general. And if you need more information on anything, visit our YouTube channels, join our newsletters, see us on Twitter/X, Instagram. We're everywhere, including Threads.
Yes, we are.
Which is a new meta platform. Story number one you wanted to introduce. It wasn't on the list, but we thought it was kind of interesting. Tell me how I can go out and buy land in PEI and sell it to some other unsuspecting country for four times as much as I paid for it, because I'm going to be doing that this week.
Yeah, that actually is something that is a true story that I have experienced this year, where I have a property seller who believed their property, although now I've done my market evaluation, I'll give just round numbers. Their property evaluation, just as an example, this isn't what they actually are, say was $100,000. This particular property owner felt that if I marketed the property to them, and they were very specific in their country that they wanted me to market to, felt that this particular country would agree to pay up to four times what the actual property value is, and that I was underpricing it at the $100,000. So they were wanting me to market it to this other country at a higher price, a premium price, and with a clear conscience, if somebody was interested and trusted me as a professional, to believe that what I was saying is factual information, this is market value. I could not do that, Michael, with a clear conscience and sleep at night. And I would hope that they would have found an experienced realtor that would have done a reverse CMA and say, these people are out to lunch.
Well, it's a good case of having a buyer's agent. So you have someone representing you that can look at that property and say, no, this is overpriced by 400%. So what was this other country? Was it North Korea, where they don't have access to the internet, or realtor.ca? You can't do a CMA?
No, I'd rather not say. I felt really bad just to assume that people think they can take advantage of other countries. I was very upset. I was upset for a few days.
Not to mention the fact that if that was reality, why wouldn't we just go out and start buying up lots for 20 or 50 grand and turning them into 80 to 100 grand, just flipping them out every day, all day long? Like, it doesn't happen. The world is an international world. The reason I mentioned North Korea is it's probably one of the only countries that has no internet access for the most part.
Well, and this particular property owner too wasn't, they're not Canadians. They're not, they are from another country themselves and are making this assumption.
So number one, it's ridiculous to think that. Number two, be honest.
I agree.
Property's worth what the property is worth. The other day we were in thermostat hell. Do you remember that house?
Yes, I do.
So this particular house was sitting vacant. It was just above zero, but we're hitting under to minus 10, minus 15 that week, and the house had no heat on whatsoever. One of the thermostats, there was three of them. One was in the garage. It was dead. Batteries were not working. The thermostat was garbage. It needs to be replaced. The other thermostat, you had to hit it with a broom handle in order to get the buttons to move. And then they had another thermostat in the basement. If you're going to leave a house vacant, or even if you're living in one, or you're looking at buying one, note where the thermostats are and what they're set for. Number one, you don't want your house to freeze. Number two, you want your thermostats to work. But in this particular house, because it was so cheaply put together, they had one thermostat for the whole main floor, which was in the front of the house, which had southern exposure, a bunch of windows around it, and a heat pump supplying a second form of heat, which all were hitting this thermostat. So the thermostat would never, ever trigger the boiler to send water to the radiators in the back bedrooms and the kitchen So it was an ice box. So what they had running in the back with the other unit, because it was exactly the same, they had electric heaters running in the back of the house because the radiators never fired up because they only put one thermostat in that main floor where it should have had two. It should have had one in the master bedroom at the back on the north side and then one in the front. Very odd situation, but something to look for if you're buying it. It's not an easy thing to just start putting in zone controls and wiring, rewiring, replumbing radiators and thermostats if you want to move them around in a finished house.
Yeah, after the fact, once it's all been built and developed. So when you're looking at properties, that might be one of the things that you could add to your list just to see how many thermostats, how many zones there are. So that maybe the bedrooms have their one temperature setting, the front room. And like you said, the sun was just baking in on the day that we were there. Plus, there was the heat pump that was also, you know, a secondary heat source that most would end up having ran anyways. Just poor constructed home.
One of the things I look for is when I visit the utility room is I look, as far as heat's concerned, is I look at the boiler. In this case, it was an electric boiler. Most of them on the island are oil-fired. And I look for zone controls, which are a steel little box that's probably, what, 4 inches by 3 inches?
Yeah.
And each one of those boxes has a little motor in it that controls a valve, which is hooked up to a thermostat. They're usually in the furnace room or the boiler room. Sometimes they can be mounted in other places, particularly if it's a bigger house, but it's usually mounted near the boiler. That's something you can look into because it will give you more control over your heating system in the house. Moving along, just had another house close there the other day, and the vendors, the owners in British Columbia said, "Where's my money? Where's their money sitting after the deal closes?"
Well, that is something that a seller needs to discuss and instruct with their lawyer as to how are they going to get paid.
Where is it sitting at this point? It just closed. It'd be in their trust account.
The lawyer's trust account.
Yes.
Absolutely.
So where's your money? It's at your lawyer's office, and you need to tell the lawyer how you'll receive those funds. And one huge word of caution, I would not get them to mail or courier a bank draft because you may as well just put cash in that box and send it because there has been cases. There was one case in Ontario where a lady got paid through a bank draft, $700,000+, lost the bank draft, and the bank said, "Well, that's as good as cash. You're out of luck." And it took her a year or two to get that money back.
Yeah, not a...
Best thing to do is deposit it.
Yeah.
Or wire it.
Speak to your lawyer. Why didn't they speak to their lawyer? Why were they asking you?
Because they think I'm their lawyer. They ask me everything. Anything that comes across their radar, they think I'm responsible for the weather, the rain. I'm like Trump.
Well, it could be, too. They're not going to get billed any extra. So they're a little terrified maybe to call their lawyer in case they get billed extra minutes. And that might be it. Or you've just become a very trusted source and they feel you're their support network. They want to... You must have done a great job for them to continue to ask you even little questions like that.
We'll just go with that.
Okay.
Ordering disconnects. Wanted to tell us about that. I sell my house. Now do I just sit back and wait for the check to show up?
For the disconnects?
Yes. Do I order disconnects? Does the lawyer do that for electricity, internet, okay, telephone, insurance? What else? Snow plowing, oil delivery, propane delivery. All of these accounts need to be what?
The account holder, the provider, needs to be contacted to let them know that you have sold your property or that it has closed. Now, really good, and this is a good topic, Michael, to just kind of discuss, who should you call before closing? Who do you call after closing or on day of closing? Before closing, obviously, you need to contact your electricity, your oil, your propane provider, all of those services you need to notify before. Now, you can contact your insurance company, but I will say I always advise my clients, do not say disconnect end my services for my insurance on this day because this is closing, just in case it doesn't close on that day. And now the house, because we've had one of those homes last year, Michael, where the home was sitting for, and it actually, the closing got delayed by about 2 weeks. So for almost 2 weeks, this house was sitting with no insurance. The seller became very stressed. They ended up calling after the insurance had been closed or canceled, and the insurance company was charging them an insurmountable, we're talking $300+ a day just to have the insurance on it until the closing actually happened. So insurance, I'd always say on day of closing. I don't know.
If the house is vacant for 2 weeks, it needs to be insured as a vacant house as well. We've talked about that in the past. But the main thing is people are going to want electricity and internet usually when they move into the house. And both of those services typically will give you a disconnect or a confirmation code, which you need to forward to the purchaser. In some cases, the lawyers will handle the disconnects for electricity, but they're typically not going to and wouldn't be authorized to order disconnects for all your other services, Bell, Eastlake, propane, oil, Irving, whatever.
Yeah, and to forward your mail, I would be forwarding your mail at least a couple days prior to your closing on your property or before you move out to the new property, because mail can be interrupted for as much as 11 days. If you are concerned with this and you have something coming, make sure that you, you know, prepare for that. If not, you can easily do it on the moving day and just make sure that, and again, like put in a move, change of address. You know how often you see lots of mail coming into these new properties because people decide they don't want to bear the added cost.
I subscribe to the Postal Service. I use email.
Okay. Well, there's still people that get mail and there's still government documents and that come in the mail. Put in a change of address with Canada Post.
What about these centralized mailboxes? Usually you'd have one or more keys for that. What do you do with that? Just throw it away?
No, the correct way to deal with the mail kiosks is to, at closing, bring your mail key down to Canada Post and drop it off and say, I have moved. I no longer live at this address. And the new property owners will need to bring some sort of document, whether it's a bill showing that you own it or you bring your deed down to Canada Post and you have to apply for a new mailbox.
On to frozen lockboxes and access to houses, particularly on closing day. Murphy's Law dictates that if you're closing on a house, that will be the day the lockbox is a frozen brick, which you cannot access. Or if you have an electronic keypad, it doesn't work anymore. And I've had both of those things happen. And invariably, they're always happening on a Friday night at 9 or 10 o'clock at night, or Sunday morning at 10 o'clock when they're doing their pre-closing inspection. Make sure if you have a house that's being shown, or more importantly, for a pre-closing inspection, which they do before the house closes, that there's an alternate way in the house or an alternate contact person that could open that house in case the lockbox, electronic lockbox, or physical mechanical lockbox doesn't work or is frozen. Any advice?
Well,
Or bring a sledgehammer.
Yeah, lock de-icer. Always have, if you're a realtor, you can get those little bottles of lock de-icer at Canadian Tire or most hardware stores. I always have a bottle of that in my vehicle as my backup to be able to make sure, instead of the sledgehammer I use my lock de-icer. It just takes a few minutes sometimes for that to work. But on that note, now I was showing a property yesterday and there's a little trick that I know to do, but I didn't share with these clients and I felt kind of bad. So I want to make sure I throw it out there. And it is something that I'm going to make sure I offer during the winter season to show properties, is I always double sock at the very minimum when I'm showing properties because I don't like my feet cold. And some people don't have their heat up, you know, past say 14, 15 degrees Celsius. And as a result, it can get a little, you know, nippy on the toes. Well, it was an older lady and her feet were freezing. So if you are looking at properties, or if you're a realtor listening to this, just either advise your clients to bring some slippers or advise them to double sock, and the same with yourself, because that will help you out tremendously, have a more pleasant experience while viewing the property. The other thing that I share with all my team, and I don't know what your office does, Michael, is we have a realtor winter survival kit, which could help buyers as well. So I'm just going to quickly name all these items off. Always have extra portable phone batteries, a full tank of gas, bottled water. A portable shovel is important sometimes, so you never know where you're going to end up finding yourself. The lock de-icer, of course. Boots, gloves, an extra flashlight, winter tires, a bag of salt just in case you get yourself stuck on some icy surface with clients, and then obviously the dry extra socks, and even have extra socks in your vehicle just in case you end up stepping in a puddle inside the home, and possibly a first aid kit. So that's our winter realtor survival kit that we use at our office.
I carry an extra pair of jeans, boots, socks. Because there's one house I went to where I went into the basement, the lights are all off, I put my foot on the floor and the water came up to my knee.
That's not good.
It was not good.
Okay.
Stats. Many people this time of the year are sitting around going, what's happening with my house? Is anybody looking at the listing? Well, that's a good question. And where can they find their stats and who can provide those?
So we have, if you're looking at apps, there's a red app, realtor.ca, and that's what the public and consumers get to look at. You're a realtor, and if you are a realtor, you should have, there's a realtor.ca app that is black. This app is specifically for realtors and listing agents specifically, so that we can see what our stats are. That is such a, I love this app. I can go in, see how many people have liked, viewed the property. And again, all this information is drawn from realtor.ca, not third-party sites. However, I can also see how many people have favorited, because we get to go through the actions taken. And if they favorited the property, you know, how many are there? If you have a high number of favorited likes on your property, if you're the seller, sometimes that's an indication that people are price watching. They're waiting to see if you do a price adjustment so that they, because they're very interested, but they feel you're priced a little high. So this, the app, it is, again, you can go to any app store, the Google or the Apple app store. And when you type in realtor, you should, if you see the black one and you're a listing agent, you should make sure you have that as one of your apps.
This is stuff that would be supplied to the vendors either through our app or through our desktop app, which will give you all the stats for your listing, including what countries are looking at it, how many times it's been viewed, and et cetera.
And it's a really nice little pie charts and that. It's really user-friendly, and it's so easy for the realtor just to go share, send, and they can get a 7-day, a 30-day, an all-history view since the property's been on the market. So depending on what you're looking for, you can, as a seller specifically ask, and as an agent, you know, be consistent, whether you're giving weekly reports or monthly reports.
And the other thing is that probably one of our best tools to market a property is YouTube. And ask your agent for the YouTube stats if you have a YouTube video and that YouTube channel actually has any views or that video is actually being marketed. You should have a meaningful set of data there as well.
And that's a really good point too, Michael. Check out the YouTube video. Don't get enamored and all excited because you've got your own little commercial on your house. Check out what the views are. If they don't have many views, no one's really seeing it. So that is a very important item that you should be when you're picking a realtor too. To what kind of audience do they have? How many people are actually going to see my little house commercial?
Absolutely. Now this week, and I think you missed this webinar, there was a webinar that was a national webinar, and it was on home inspections and things that you can do that are over and above a typical home inspection. First question, why did you miss that webinar?
I have a very busy schedule.
We'll expect to see you in the next one. So with home inspections, here's some quick things just to keep in mind. I'll go over fast as possible. In the winter, not all things can be inspected. Sidewalks, driveways, lawns, roofing, you know, there's a number of things that can't be inspected. A home inspection has nothing to do with code. We did have one inspector in PEI. Every house did not go through successful home inspections because he was trying to bring everything up to code, which is ridiculous. A home inspection is to check the house. It's not to upgrade it, renovate it, or bring it up to code. In PEI, in most provinces and states, home inspections are not mandatory. Although, and I found this interesting, in BC and Alberta, apparently according to this webinar, they are, which I think is a great idea.
And is that mandatory as per the financing from the lender?
We didn't cover that question.
Okay.
All they said is it was mandatory. So I don't know if it's mandatory for purposes of a conveyance or the sale of a house or for mortgage purposes. I suspect it's probably for mortgage purposes, but it's hard to say. The other thing is they said always consult an expert, get a home inspector, get someone that's inspected over, what do they say here, 100 home inspections, and ask them how many insurance claims they've had. Apparently, home inspectors are in a position of liability in that they do end up getting sued from time to time by making either false claims or omitting information that would be extremely important when someone's buying a house, which I don't think is really fair to the home inspectors because they're doing a job and nobody's perfect, right?
Yeah, and they're just only able to inspect what they can see. They're not allowed to tear apart things within the home.
They're not able to rip off drywall and all that kind of stuff. They said there's more problems when you get to the pre-80s. Obviously, the older the house, the more they're going to find. Home inspections are not a pass or fail. They're just information. There's no grade at the last page of a home inspection. It usually just points out, you know, here's some things you might want to look at, gives you a summary, but there's certainly no pass or fail, and it's whatever way the purchaser wants to view it. Wouldn't you agree?
Yeah, I usually say it's like a honey-do list. This is as if you've lived in the home for about 5 years. You have a little more insight and awareness as to the upkeep and the maintenance, that what's required in the next 6 months, what's going to be required in the next couple years or 5 years, just so you're aware. If the list is insurmountable and you don't feel you can financially afford to carry this home, or if, again, if some people don't care if there's structural issues or mold, they'll just take care of it. But if these are tasks or issues, deficiencies that you just are not willing, interested, or able to because of allergies or things like that, then this property is not the property for you.
Some other notes here. Be aware of anything that covers floors, garage floors, things behind other things like bags, what do you call it, luggage, posters, paintings, anything that's covering wall drapes in some houses. Throw rugs on the floor. I just listed a house where there are two throw rugs and both of them cover plywood, which is surrounded with hardwood. So it looks like you have a hardwood floor, but when you roll up the rugs, there's no hardwood floor underneath. This should be disclosed, and we are disclosing it in about four different places. But these are things you want to look for. And I almost fell into the trap once when I offered on a house where half the driveway was covered in snow. Of course, the driveway was all shot. They were trying to cover that. Have you run into any things that were covered?
I made a personal home purchase when I bought a home in, I can say where, Brantford, Ontario is where I bought. And the master bedroom furniture was all against the walls. And I wouldn't have moved any of the furniture. I've always been mindful of this going forward as a result of it. But at closing day, it looked like, you know, where they paint, unfortunately, on TV shows where the murder body was. Well, that's
the chalk outline.
The chalk outline. Well, that's what it looked like in this master bedroom. There were one paint color behind all the furniture, all in these, like, you know, whatever they could fit the paintbrush around. They didn't even move the furniture to paint this bedroom. And it was the contrast between an eggshell yellow and a chocolate brown. So it was very noticeable. And I was really upset. I felt they were hiding something. And their argument was, we didn't hide anything. You just didn't move the furniture. Well, I never thought I should take the liberty. So I do peek behind dressers in that. It did cost around $700 to get someone to come in and fix that. I wasn't impressed, but that's another thing that could easily be hidden. Can't believe I experienced that.
On this seminar, they also mentioned that the home inspector cannot inspect for absolutely everything, and they're not an expert in absolutely everything. So when it comes to the wood-burning appliances, particularly wood stoves or fireplaces, you want to get what's called a WET certified inspector for that, WETT. So that would be a specialized inspector. Usually what you do is you have your initial home inspection, and then if anything pops up where there's a concern, say over the electrical panel, plumbing, or maybe there's an implication of asbestos or mold, there are specialists in all these areas and you should contact them.
So can I ask you a question, Michael? Because I know people don't seem to understand this. Under the home inspection clause, does that mean I can only call a home inspector in to look at the home?
I don't have the home inspection clause in front of me, but I would think that if I was going to bring in a home inspector, a wet inspector, an asbestos mold inspector in Nova Scotia, I found it interesting. I was at a home inspection there, and they actually put a sewer cam down the drain to see if there's any tree roots in the drain. And they've got a rule there that if there's roots further than half away from the house, halfway down the pipe away from the house, the city would pay for the repair. If it's a halfway towards the house, then you would pay for it.
Well, I do want to just...
I don't know if that answers your question.
No, it doesn't, but that's okay. The home inspection clause encompasses any inspection. So if you want the electrical, call an electrician. Again, like you're saying, the home inspector just gives a broad, it's like the icing on the cake overview of all the systems. Whereas if you have something specific, a plumber, an electrician, under that home inspection clause, you can call in any specialist that you feel you would like to have look at that property.
And sewer inspections are something we don't do here. I haven't seen any major issues or any issues whatsoever with sewers, but it's certainly a good idea what they're doing in Nova Scotia, I think. The other thing they mentioned was ozone checks, odor removal, well and septic checks, radon checks are becoming more and more popular these days. Who was present, which is another thing that's probably not in our forms. In some provinces and states, it's mandatory for the real estate agent to be there. But if you are going to have people present, I think put it in the document over and above the home inspection clause would make more sense. You can never disclose too much.
So you feel that there's a home inspection clause and ours are already pre-written to be done on or before a certain date. So you feel that we should put a secondary in there saying buyer will be present at home inspection?
Buyer, electrician, plumber, whatever I'm going to do to inspect that property, I think it's better to spell it out. That way you don't run into any issues with the vendor saying I didn't agree to that down the road because they've signed off on it, preferably initialed that paragraph as well.
Okay. That's just a different perspective.
You can consider it overkill.
No.
But I don't think you can ever over-document things.
Well, there are times where the buyer shows up for the home inspection and the seller is there and the seller ends up saying, well, I wasn't told the buyer was going to be here. And it creates a little bit of turmoil.
It's done.
Yeah, I agree. I like that.
Don't argue with your home inspector. You're going to make him go home, cry, and drink excessive amounts of alcohol. Leave him alone. He's just the messenger. Anything the home inspector points out that you don't agree with, don't argue with him or her. Go get it verified by one or more experts that specialize in whatever area that would be, right?
Yeah, don't take it personal. They're not trying to criticize your home or anything. This is what they've seen on their visual inspection. And if there is any concerns with the home inspection report, just call in the professional who's actual professional in that field, that area.
Keep family members out of inspections. This is always something I've believed, and I know you do as well.
Yeah.
I would not bring a family member in to do your inspection, regardless of whatever knowledge or experience or background they profess to have, because they are not unbiased. They've got an emotional tie to that transaction. A lot of them will come across as trying to save you from the worst decision you've ever made in your life. I'd rather have a home inspector that's seen 1,000 or more homes that can compare those homes to this home rather than someone that might inspect one house every 20 years for a family member.
Yeah, that just leads into hiring a family member to do work for you as a realtor, as a home inspector in all different fields. One, it could make, if things go sideways, Christmas dinner a little uncomfortable and awkward. Hard to become upset sometimes with a family member, even though you think I'll be more comfortable. It just adds extra layers to it. Plus, like you said, they're feeling like they're a little biased. I'm trying to save you from the worst purchase or deal of your life. They will criticize everything or they'll miss something. And what are your repercussions? You can't go back to a family. I mean, you could and destroy the relationship, but you miss this in the inspection and now it's costing me $5,000, $10,000. Just hire professionals. Keep family at arm's length away from your business.
And as far as home inspections, I prefer a pre-inspection because it's done. Lawyers will obviously tell you that you want to get your own home inspection done because the home inspection done by the vendor may be prejudicial or biased and they worked for the vendor. There's other legal implications in that as to who the home inspector worked for and what their duties are and all that sort of stuff. But negating that, a lot of people look at a home inspection as a tool to use as leverage to get the price down. So if you are one of these people and you're planning on doing this, anything you're asking for, you need to know who's doing the work, what's being done, when is it being done, who's holding trust money, if there is any, and if the repairs or upgrades or modifications aren't complete, what is it going to cost the vendors?
Yeah.
Did I miss anything?
Note the five components to a good clause to make it clear as to what happens as a result if this isn't fulfilled.
An example of that might be there's a giant gaping hole in the living room that my wife's going to fall through. We want it patched by a certain date using plywood and hardwood, and we want this person to do it. If it's not done by closing, then you owe us $1,000.
There's going to be a holdback.
Or a new wife.
Yeah, it's called a holdback. And the holdback, I don't get involved in actually stating the number. I do say that it is up to the lawyers and what they mutually agree it to be. I don't want that responsibility. The last point that we'll end up discussing is leverage and negotiations. What happens to a seller's position in a negotiation or even just as a result of a showing when the seller keeps hounding you as the listing agent to go after the buyer's agent to find out, is the buyer offering? Is the buyer offering? What was their viewpoint? You know, let them know we're interested in selling. Could you follow up again? Can you follow up again? We haven't heard anything in a week. What do you do in those situations, Michael?
I tell them to leave me alone and I change my phone number. You try to explain to them that all you're doing is you're weakening your bargaining position as a seller by nattering and driving the purchaser's agent nuts. If they want to buy the house, they'll buy the house. You calling them every 4 days isn't going to help. And if anything, it's just going to demonstrate to them that you're desperate to sell. So they're going to come in with a lowball offer because you've been silly enough to drive them crazy.
Yeah, just trust when you hire a professional that they know what they're doing. I know you feel the time as a seller more than the realtor does because we're busy managing, you know, many clients. And for you, this is your house. You might be a control thing. You just want to, I want to know what's going on. Did you follow up with them? Because maybe you don't trust your realtor. Maybe you don't feel they're doing a good job. So you feel you have to micromanage them as their boss. If you've hired somebody, trust them. You can ask the question. I usually, when I have a seller that's like that, I just say, you know what? We'll give this a couple days and maybe perhaps I'll follow up. Because as far as the buyer's concerned, we have a dozen showings going on. But when you are chasing as a listing agent, the buyer's agent, it shows there's no showings that have happened since yours and we're desperate. Can your clients, it's like the Titanic moment at the end of the movie, come back because you're so desperate to try to get a sale out of that buyer.
So if you're looking at properties, one of the things you could do is look at 10 or 15 houses and see who reaches out, see who's the most desperate one, and then write a lowball offer.
Mm-hmm. That's a strategy that I never would have thought of, but 100%. If you're interested in all of them, sure. Which seller chases me down because that's the property I'm going to go in with a lowball offer, and I probably stand the best chance to get a deal.
Wrap it up. Time is over.
Just wanted to thank everyone for listening to the Michael and Patty Show, otherwise known as MAPS. If you have any topics, any discussions that, you know, you would like to hear us discuss, debate, you know, sometimes we agree on things, sometimes we don't. We would definitely, you know, be more than happy to cover the topic, answer any questions. And again, we're very appreciative of our listeners and you showing up every week to listen to our latest conversations that we have. So thanks for listening. Until next time.
Have a great day.